Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Our special guest, Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist and BA philosopher from the Netherlands, and Sandy Fries, certified professional life coach of Indiana, are back with us today to once again bring their expertise into the psychological effects of the incarcerated men and women throughout the penal system around the world. Solitary confinement, restrictive blocks, health care, and lack of in-prison forensic clinics, and much more. So we won't waste any more time. We're going to get right down with it, and let's welcome Mariam Jacobs and Sandy Fries. Mariam, you're on with us?
Yes, Leon, I am with you.
Okay, do you want to start?
That's
Sandy,
okay.
Are you on with us?
I am. Good morning.
Hello,
good morning.
Sandy.
Welcome to both of you. And we are going to get started this morning. And Mariam, would you like to start?
That's okay.
Please do.
Okay. What do you like to discuss now?
There are so many things that are going on in this country and around the world today. There is so much going on in this country in itself, in the United States. And you have been bringing a lot of light into the discussions that we have had about the comparison between the prisons in the U.S. and the prisons abroad. There is so much going on right now with the solitary confinement. There are so many people, incarcerated individuals, who have been put in solitary confinement and on restrictive blocks as an excuse because of the virus, because of this pandemic that's global. And a lot of these prisoners do not deserve to be in these kind of situations, nor do they deserve to be in these situations without anything to occupy their minds. These are some of the issues that we face in the United States. I go on Facebook. I belong to many groups, and there are many individuals who have loved ones incarcerated who are going through the same thing. Their loved ones are being mistreated. They're being fed improperly. They're being confined. They're being detained in their cells for 22 to 24 hours a day. It doesn't make any sense. The prisons in the United States are more like camps from other countries. It's like a prisoners of war and not prisoners who are serving their time for making a mistake. So these are some of the issues that I'd like to discuss this morning and have your view and also have Sandy Fries's view on all of these things that are occurring in these prisons. The lack of health care. Prisoners have been down with so many disabilities, so many diseases, so many illnesses. They haven't been treated. Or they have been treated or they have been looked at and they're still awaiting treatment. But these are some things that are also lacking in this country. We have a governor, even in Massachusetts, who refuses to release prisoners in spite of all of this going on right now with this pandemic. There are prisoners, even nonviolent, that are still incarcerated, serving life sentences. There are so many things that we need to look at. First-time offenders of any offense, they deserve a second chance. There are some that are being targeted by the victim's family or by the prison officials. There are some that are paying a high price for a crime that they committed. These are issues that I need to address, I'd like to address at some point in time. But to get started, I'd like to have your point of view and also Sandy's point of view of some of these issues that we're discussing right now.
Well, I think when I listen to what you say and the things that I'm researching for my book, then it all starts with the goal of incarceration. What is the reason why we want to incarcerate all these people? And things like solitary confinement, other punishments, they are an outcome of that goal. And what I see is I have looked up the word correction. I wanted to know exactly what the word correction means because we call these institutions
institutions Department of Correction.
Yeah, of
correctional facilities.
Yes, and I have looked that word up in a dictionary as if I didn't know what it was, and it can go two ways. And that makes it already very interesting to see how incarceration was built and how it can maintain, because it needs both punishment and rehabilitation. So because correction means both these, have both these words in it, they can say that they want to use incarceration for rehabilitation. They can sell that picture to the outside world. And at the same time, they can use it for punishment and further punishment, because both terms refer to corrections. And what you, Sandy, last week, you read those words from the advisor of Nixon, I believe it was.
Yes.
About that game. And what you see in the word corrections is already the same game. And it's very important to be aware of it, because these things, they seem small, but they are huge. They lead to 2.2 million people who are incarcerated. So if they sell that picture of corrections as a form of rehabilitation, they also can sell the picture of solitary confinement as a form of rehabilitation. And the world takes it, because most people are not thinking about incarceration or whatever. They only have this picture of bad people have to be locked up. That's it. They don't go further in their thinking. So that's one of the reasons that mass incarceration can exist. It's really about this game. And that's why these things happen. So only if the goal is changed, then all the outcomes that we see that are devastating, only then they will change. That's very important, I think.
It is.
I think so too, yes.
I would like to read a quote from somebody, and I would like for the both of you to think of you if you recognize this in mass incarceration. Is that okay?
Yes, please.
Please.
Okay, I will read the quote now. The best way to take control over a people and control them utterly is to take a little of their freedom at a time, to erode rights by a thousand tiny and almost imperceptible reductions. In this way, the people will not see those rights and freedoms being removed until past the point at which these changes cannot be reversed.
Wow.
Do you recognize this in mass incarceration?
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Do you know who wrote this down?
No.
I'm trying to think.
It was Adolf Hitler in Mein Kampf.
Yeah.
Shocking, isn't it?
Very.
It is.
Very shocking.
So much going on in the prison. So much.
Well, and it goes back that far. It's what you read, the quote you read, Sandy, last week was about the Southern strategy. But this is the same mechanism. You know, Nixon started the Southern strategy at that time, but the mechanism, this way of manipulation, is way older. The mechanism didn't start with Nixon, only it's called that way when it starts with him. But you see now with Adolf Hitler, he did the same thing.
Yes.
And that's why I think that mass incarceration is able to exist.
When you mention it, it's not only in the facilities itself, the housing that they have them in. It's so cold. It's so distant. It's nothing like I read about in other countries, in the Netherlands, Norway, and others. Their housing is totally different. facilities that they house these inmates, individuals in, are so cold. It's like war camps. And the people that are overseeing them are treating them like they themselves are criminal, the officials, the guards overseeing. I can't understand how it can be even called the Department of Corrections when all they do is bring them down even further. When prisoners are calling themselves animals, because this is all they're hearing day in and day out, is that prisoners are not worth anything, that they're animals. They made their mistakes, just like we all have made our mistakes. Unfortunately, many have not gotten caught, but those that have gotten caught should at least be able to serve their time without being targeted, without being abused or deprived or provoked or harassed. These things have to stop.
Yeah, but I think, you know, if you get this to the surface, the things we are discussing now, like these quotes, like what does the word correction mean, then you can go to officials, then you can go to politicians and confront them with it. Because what you describe now is the goal of incarceration. All these awful things that hurt us are goals for incarceration, and it goes way deeper. Otherwise, it could not exist and maintain in this time. I mean, the court of Hitler was in World War II. It's 70 years ago or something. But the mechanisms, they have to bring to the surface, been brought to the surface with evidence, and then a change can be done if you can point at this is what's really going on. You use the word corrections, and you sell it as rehabilitation. But, you know, it's what you also see on websites. Every website from the facilities are full of all kinds of programs. Well, what both of you said, a lot of imprisoned people have almost no access to these programs. But if they do have access, how can you go through a process of healing in that environment? You know, how you cannot heal in that cold environment of concrete and iron. So the building is built to punish. It's not built to heal. That's why we have buildings that are designed for solitary confinement, that we have showers with the temperature being regulated on the outside. More of these things. We really have to get a picture and become aware of everything of mass incarceration is focused on retaliation and revenge. And I've also looked at what the official goals are for incarceration in the United States by law. And what you see is that the emphasis is on punishment. There are four goals, and only the fourth or the fifth goal is rehabilitation. But the first goals are about retaliation and punishment. So the whole system is built on that. And that's why it's very hard to change the facts on the surface, because you have to change the facts below the surface.
Absolutely. You know, Miriam, when you said the quoted the quote from Adolf Hitler, the ideals and the methods that we see in our country today as far as mass incarceration and solitary confinement, those are not new methods. Have you heard the saying, nothing new is under the sun?
Yeah,
you know, and there we go from here we are in our prison systems displaying these things. But Adolf Hitler, and I'm sure before Adolf Hitler there was someone else that had this mindset. So it goes so far back. That's, I think, what has to be addressed and changed, is that even though this idea has been around probably for hundreds of years, it's an improper method. It is an improper ideal.
Yes, and
continue this.
Of course. But what I see now, what I've been thinking about, these mechanisms, Everything always exists from polarities. Everything has an opposite. That counts for what you see in nature, that counts for you, what you see in systems, and it counts what you see in the human psyche. What you see with mass incarceration is that, what I think, I'm not sure, but what I think is, and we have discussed it before, the United States is a country of what we call the melting pot of cultures. And it sounds very open, you know, the freedom. Mm-hmm. The freedom is in the United States. But what we forget is that this melting pot of cultures excludes the black people, excludes the poor people, excludes Native Americans and more groups. So it sounds very open and including, but it is very excluding. And if you think about how the United States is started, then you see it's built, the whole country is built on exclusion, because the black people were taken into the United States as tools, as slaves, as tools. That's one exclusion from the melting pot in the start. Mm. The Native Americans were killed in endless wars, and after that they were driven into reservations. That's also a kind of incarceration, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the start of the United States. And what you, and you, if you go further, then you see that with mass incarceration, you see that the same groups are excluded from the melting pot of cultures, because the melting pot of cultures are the colonists, the people who are rooted in Europe, and they want to reach the American dream. That's exclusively for them. And all the other groups have to be removed from that melting pot. They are a threat to the people who want to reach that ridiculous, I find it ridiculous, American dream. For me, it's a fantasy like Disneyland. But okay, but it goes that far. And it's important to be aware of it if you want to make a plan for change in mass incarceration. If you want to change that, then you have to be aware of all these sentiments that are in that country. That is important. And the whole system of incarceration is built on excluding people from that. And I think that key figures who can make a difference in this way of incarceration, they have to become aware of it. Somebody has to tell them how it works, how it really works.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy, please.
It makes me think of a friend. His name is Ahmad Udin. He moved from Jerusalem to the United States, Chicago, mm-hmm. when he was 12. He had a very rough life in Jerusalem. His father was unkind, abusive, and he got over here. His father came first. A couple years later, he sent for the family. And he had that same mentality in his mind, that the United States of America is a melting pot. When he landed at the airport and got out of the airport, he was so devastated, because he, in his child's mind, had really believed the streets were paved with gold.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, he genuinely believed that. And then he thought, well, at least I'll be accepted. I have a better place to live now. He wasn't accepted. He was bullied all throughout his educational life in high school. Turned towards drugs. You know, his family life wasn't good. He thought his gang family mm-hmm. embraced him and loved him. Anyway, he ended up spending years incarcerated.
Yeah.
And he is out now, and he's written a book. But, you know, he entails in his book how he felt, how betrayed he felt when he got here.
Mm-hmm.
And how betrayed he felt over and over again by the justice system and by the way he was arrested and by the interrogation, you know, a brutal interrogation. So, yeah, I mean, people do think that. People outside of the United States think, wow, that's the place to be.
Yeah, so what you see again is that a term like in this story, the melting pot of cultures, seem to be open, but there's another story beneath it. That's again, you know, what that the surface is so different from what's beneath that surface. And I think we are now living in a time, and that also has to do with your president, Donald Trump. I think the only good thing about the 4 years with Donald Trump is that all these things are coming to the surface now. I see is that the United States is the land of opposites, and there is no balance in it. There are only extremes.
Yeah. I will say one thing, and the problem is not it's not hidden. The media knows there's problems in the prison system in this country. The politicians know. Politicians have been lied to. And the thing that bothers me is there are some politicians that are good enough to call into the prison to find out what's going on, but yet they find out that they're being lied to, and that's where that's where it stops. They don't pursue it. And this is a major problem in this country, because if we can't depend on our elected officials worldwide, what are we going to be able to do? We have in this country right now, we can see what's going on with the national leadership. The political leaders cannot do, they can, but they choose not to. They're not doing as much as they can do. Years ago, or in other countries, they would have had some kind of coup. They would have gotten rid of bad seeds that were leading the entire nation. In today's world, we have political leaders who are being elected every term and still do not care enough to fight for these people that are being treated so inhumanely. Their civil rights, their human rights are being violated. And look what we have going on right now. No one is making a move. Prison Illegal Services in Massachusetts, they pick and choose. They're representing some prisoners that were affected not only by the pandemic, but also by a riot that took place in January 10th, 2020. A riot, an unprovoked attack on all prisoners by the prison officials and guards, and they picked 40 people to represent, while there are some still going through the trauma and still being affected by that a year later, some of them being physically unable to even function normally, and they're being denied. This is the country we live in. They're going to celebrate their Christmas holiday in a couple of days with their children, with their loved ones, and these people in prison that are suffering so, so badly are going to be suffering continuously, and they call themselves in America humane. Sometimes I don't blame the prison officials as much as I blame the politicians and the legal services and others that can actually do something about it if they all work together. Everybody's putting prisoner legal services taking the lead, letting prisoner legal services take the lead when prisoner legal services saying to people that are trying to get help for their loved ones, we don't have the resources. Well, if they don't have the resources, then these others, ACLU and others like them, should be taking some of this responsibility on instead of letting these people suffer like they're some kind of animals, which they believe they are because that's all they're hearing from prison officials day in and day out.
You know, I was reading a study last night. It's from 2013, but it's from the U.S. National Library of Medicine, National Institutes of Health. And, you know, we talk about a lot about how prisoners are being abused once they get to the point of being incarcerated. But if you look at many, many of these prisoners being abused have grown up, for example, 37% of those incarcerated for child abuse have been they have gone through psychological abuse themselves.
I thought I was the only one who couldn't speak English.
But no, I'm right there with you, Miriam.
Oh, nice. I don't feel alone anymore.
Yeah, so, well, that's good. those domestic violence offenders, 42%, have also gone through psychological abuse. You know, those who have seen their mother physically abused, 36% of the sex offenders that are incarcerated have seen that. You know, they've seen things like criminal behavior in their household, a parental divorce, seeing their mother abused, mental illness within their homes, substance abuse,
childhood
sexual abuse, physical
violations.
Abuse. Yes, and so
childhood
they grew
violation.
Up with this. Yes, and so you know, by the time they're incarcerated, they've already been through enough. But then they're incarcerated, and there's a whole new system waiting to punish them.
Yeah, they don't incarcerate people. They incarcerate only crimes. The human being behind the crime is not there anymore for them. But you know, even when you take rights away, voting rights away, and you lock them up, and you try to not think about them because you don't want them in your society, they are still there. They are still as human as they are. It's only the perspective that changes. And I think that the group of guards who abuse prisoners are also people who have major issues. Because if you are balanced in yourself, you don't have this need to dominate over other people.
That's
so,
true.
Yeah, because it's about the opposite. There's again an opposite. Dominance versus submission. So either a guard who is dominating on this excessive way, either he has his own issues with dominance, maybe at home when he's married or she's married or whatever, she might be in a submissive position, that he has nothing to say, to tell when he's at home with his spouse, or he's dominant as well at home. So those guards have issues with the opposite, dominance versus submission. And somebody who, because we all carry that opposite, but if you have balanced it, then you don't have this need to dominate other people. And then I wonder how these people are screened before they start their education as a guard. I also saw a documentary. I sent it to Leona, and I wanted to send it to you, Sandy, and I'm going to try to send it, but that's about a maximum security prison, and I forgot where it is, but there you see it's a prison where prisoners are locked up in solitary confinement always. It's only for solitary confinement. And I think the film is about 5 years old, so I don't know how it's now. But what is very interesting to see is that prison was built in a former mine city. So the mines closed, nobody had a job, the prison was built, and the former miners were going to work in the prison. As if you're going to work, you know, first you work in a grocery store and then you go to work in another store. And what you see is nobody of the guards really knows what he's doing, that he's working with very vulnerable people. So they do their job automatically, and it's all built on procedures, following procedures, following rules. That's what the guards do too, without being aware of that they are working with people. And it's very shocking to see. It's very shocking.
Now, there's very, very little empathy. There's little empathy for these individuals.
They are
citizens.
Exactly. But they don't, you know, what they have, the feeling they have is that they are some kind of a hero because they keep society safe by locking up these people. So they are convinced that they are doing a very good job. They forget that the recidivism number is very high. But, you know, they have this feeling that they are doing a very good job. And sometimes they want to get rid of their own tension, so they beat up one of the prisoners. Then they get, one said, oh, it feels like the tension of a baseball game. And I thought, you really are not aware of what you're talking about. You don't, you are not aware of what you're dealing with, the work you do. You are just doing the things automatically. You're going to bring food, you're going to bring the mail. That's it. You're not working with individuals in his feelings. It's like he was working in a zoo or something. I will send that documentary. It's very important to see, because there you
thank
see,
you.
Yeah, there you see a lot of the mechanisms we are talking about, which are under the surface. Guards are not screened, so they can easily take their job without knowing what they are doing. The buildings are built for that. That's very important. So there you get a complete picture.
Yeah,
I would very much like to see that.
Yeah, I'm going to send
I think
it
I posted
you.
That. I think I posted that on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
A lot of the groups. That was when they were in the shopping, where they were picking up groceries and things.
The film.
Is that what? That was the one.
No, this was. I don't know. I don't remember how it's the prison is called. I will send it through.
Yeah.
But the thing is, look, the thing is, you also have a documentary on YouTube, and it's about the Norway prison, Halden prison in Norway, and the director of the Halden prison visits the prison system in the United States. That film has been made also, I think, about 6 years ago. You see these differences. And the director of the Halden prison, he had a group of prisoners in the United States, and he asked them to draw the perfect prison, and they did that without knowing they draw the Halden prison as the perfect prison. Now you have to think about this: film has been made, this director has been in the United States, people have been talking about it. It's on YouTube. Still, nothing changes. We know all this. We know the difference. We know what's going on. What you said, Leona, it's in the news. It's on Facebook. It's on social media. We know it. We know it now even more because there are body cams. There are other cameras. Still, nothing is changed. Why? That's a big question. And I think for myself, it has to do with that all these mechanisms which I describe in the book have to come to the surface, have to be pointed at, evidence-based. You cannot just, you know, scream around, oh, this is bad, because, yeah, well, the politicians say, okay, it's bad, but we have our benefits from it. Mass incarcerations, there are benefits that people take from mass incarceration. That's why it still exists. So who benefits from a reform of mass incarceration? When we reform the prison system, who is going to benefit? And we cannot only look at ideals. I wish we could. We also have to look at money.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Those who benefit, first of all, the media. The media benefits because they stay on the side that they think is going to be more beneficial for them. Not to bring out the truth, but to how many times have they called people, these law enforcement, these big shots, by their first name? The same thing with a lot of the politicians, a lot of these people that are benefiting because they figure as long as they're on the good side. All the things that have gone on with law enforcement in the past year, all these things, now what do? They put themselves in front of children, in front of elderly. They're doing all these nice little things that they're being talked about all the time, the good side. So people are seeing the good side of them. But then behind those cameras, behind the media, what's happening? A lot of people are being hurt, harmed. A lot of people are being incarcerated, you know, inappropriately. These things really upset me, because if the media put aside their own insecurities, and the politicians would put aside fear that they have to actually lead, because that's why they're elected, to lead, not to be afraid to confront someone when they're lied to. And these prison officials are lying daily to people that are calling in, saying that people are on general population when they're on restrictive blocks, which is totally different, because these restrictive blocks are worse than solitary confinement in many cases. What we need is leadership, and that's where we fail. We fail because we have people in leadership that are not doing enough. They know the problem. The media knows the problem. The media is so busy talking about themselves and how they're going to do the Christmas dinners and talking about the frogs and the fish instead of talking about lives. People are incarcerated because maybe they took a life, but they don't even try to figure out what happened. And as you girls were saying, a lot of these prisoners were victims before becoming offenders. A lot of them were trying to do.
But even if that's not the case, even I don't want to make a distinction between prisoners, because then I'm going to distinct again. For me, the system should not exist. It doesn't matter what somebody has done. It doesn't matter for me if there is a whole story behind it or not. If we are civilized society, then we should not treat anybody that way, even not a serial killer. It doesn't matter what you have done. It doesn't matter, because otherwise we are again going to respond on the surface. You know, I hated when there was this example of Kim Kardashian, who fights for the innocent in the prison. She makes the distinction, if I'm going to fight for the innocent in prison, then the underlying message is that the prison system is okay for people who did commit a crime. No, the system is not okay in itself, no matter who is in it. That's right,
and it's clearly not working. It's working, as you said before, it's working the way they want it to work. It's not working for citizens. It's not working for citizens. It's working. It's working to punish these people. But you know, if you think about it, imprisoning drug offenders, you know, is huge. That's a huge part of those living in our prison systems. But that doesn't stop drug use from other people that never have been arrested. It doesn't stop it.
No.
So get them help so they can help other people not to get there in the first place. Rehabilitate them.
Of course, and punishing for an addiction, no matter what addiction. Why punishing a drug addiction and not an alcohol addiction? There are so many addictions. Why is only the drug addiction punished? I can understand that when you are a drug offender, then you are a dealer. I can understand drug dealing. That's in the Netherlands too. It's forbidden to deal in drugs. But if you are taking drugs, you have a problem that has to be solved. Then you need to be in treatment.
Yeah.
It's crazy because you are going to you are going on drugs because you have problems, and you have problems. You have issues, life issues, issues from your youth, etc. You are not going to be in drugs because, you know, let me become a drug addict today. Yeah, that's nice. That's crazy. It's a sickness. It's a disorder. It's a kind of a disorder.
And they need treatment.
It is.
And there are treatments in prison. But that's crazy, because you can do a treatment to get rid of your drug addiction. But in the dormitories, they sell drugs. You know, there is a whole illegal business in drugs in prison. So how can you get rid of your drug addiction while other prisoners or guards or whatever offer you drugs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the system is insane itself. It's a disorder in itself.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And, you know, the people that are incarcerated are not the only ones that are being affected from their incarceration. You know, those families at home who have lost income because the breadwinner is now in prison, you know, they're growing up in poverty, these children of these incarcerated individuals. So you've taken their hopes away too, which is a vicious cycle, because when they don't have hope, and I don't know, I mean, we have the welfare system here, but you know, when people that in many states, when people that get out of prison, they're not even entitled to live in public housing or draw food stamps.
Yeah.
No. And that's a circle, what you see.
And their children are going to grow up with a lot of anger, and they're going to end up doing something and ending up in prison. So it's a cycle, as Marion mentioned earlier, too. It's a vicious cycle.
Yep, it is.
Yeah,
and treatment,
it has to be broken.
Treatment in America in prisons is very limited. It's not as it should, like educational programs. And, you know, there's some prisoners that look forward to taking these educational programs, that look forward to doing so much, getting prison jobs, because it's going to be good credit for them when they are up for parole. But when they're denied every avenue to do something productive in prison, and it comes time for them to go up before the board or even apply for commutation or pardons, they're going to be shot down right away. They're going to be denied right away because they have not done anything throughout the years. But we have prisoners that are being targeted by prison officials and guards. They're being targeted. They're being denied every request so that they have lost hope of ever being able to get out because they have not been able to do anything productive. That's the same way with the treatment. They delay the treatment. They sometimes don't even respond to the grievances. They don't respond to the prisoners when they're asking for help. These things are also a major problem.
Yeah, I think a major problem in the whole system is the randomness. You know, prisoners are completely surrendered to the randomness of the staff. And, you know, on the outside, they offer all these beautiful programs, etc. But you have luck or you have bad luck if you can aside for such a program or not. It depends on the staff that's at that moment in prison. So and that's I think the most scary thing. And what also is very important, I read an article about what time means in prison. You know, incarceration means that you pay back with time of your life. But time outside is much more than only clock time. It's also the smell of food that you eat on a certain moment of the day. It's the seasons. It's so much more. And it's all taken away from these people in buildings. While what you see in Norway is that the prisons are light, that people stay connected to domestic life because they have to heal again. They have to rehabilitate again. But as I said, the goal in the United States, the goal of imprisonment is punishment. And so in the prison, they can do what they want to do. They don't count anymore. They are from that perspective, they are no longer human beings. It's like, for some guards, it's like, you know what you said, Sandy, last week about the man in the wheelchair? I have described this in my book because those are the things that really touch me. That's, I can't stand it. It's like they are toys to play with, you know?
That's exactly how they are treated in so many, you know, I mean, I'm sure there are some facilities that do use the body cams and have cameras in every area of the prisons. I'm not saying that's going to dissuade all of things, but it does certainly help. But the point is, it shouldn't be necessary because they shouldn't be living this type of life in the first place.
Of course.
And, you know, we talk about those people who say, well, we don't have any funding. We don't have any funding. Well, how many states are diverting revenue away from health and education for our school systems to pay for prisons?
Yeah.
You know, this
yeah.
is an issue, too.
Yeah. And there's funding out there for these people that are advocating They just need to do the research. I mean, I research all the time. I have sent resources to places like PLS to do the research so that they can get more funding if that's what they keep telling everybody, they don't have the resources. And if you don't have the resources, take it down off your website so people are not going to call you for help. But when you
can't even
be transparent enough to give a person or people the reason why you cannot help them, if you can't be that transparent, you don't give any excuse at all, what's that telling the person that's trying to get help? You're not good enough for us to represent you. That's what it's saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because either you have the resources and you help these people, or you don't have the resources and you put it on your website, we can no longer take in any more cases because we don't have the resources. And then there's clicks.
Yeah.
There's clicks. It's who you know. It's who you know that gets the help. If you don't know people, if you're not in that click, you don't get the help because they're helping their friends. They're helping their friends' friends. Just like politics, when they put somebody in the prisons that's not experienced, they're doing it because they know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are so many
people
where they're not qualified, they shouldn't be there, but they're in position because of who they know or who their friends know or their family know.
There are a lot of veils in the whole system. A lot's blurred. A lot of it's mysterious. A lot of you can't really grasp it.
No, and you know, it does oftentimes just come down to the mighty dollar, and I wonder how many governmental officials have a position that is not even necessary, and that money could be spent to much better use.
That's true. I am glad you brought that up because that
mm-hmm.
is an issue. They make up positions. They make up positions.
Yes.
They drop positions out of the sky just to give somebody a job, just to give someone a position.
Yes.
The taxpayers are paying so much money in taxpayers' dollars for positions that are not even, probably they're not even doing anything with it, but they have a title.
They have a title, and that makes them feel as though they are not working for the citizens. That makes them feel that the citizens must respect them at all times. Well, they are supposed to be working for us.
Yeah, but that's forgotten. That's what they forget.
Yes.
I also think about what I came up with earlier about that corporation business, Alec. You know, the entanglement of politics and corporations. That the corporations make model law, which are accepted by politicians, and that's for the benefit of the oil markets. Incarceration costs a lot of money for the taxpayer, and you only have a high recidivism, so that's another circle. But it also is a million-dollar industry, and people earn a lot of money with it. That's why we have to see if we do reform, who is going to benefit from it then. That's money is devastating sometimes. Sometimes, a lot of times. It's all about
money. If these people were genuinely rehabilitated and got jobs and could do this without carrying the weight of having a felony or something on their shoulders, and see, then they're going to have the opportunity to encourage and to teach their children by example, not teaching their children by writing them a letter when they're incarcerated and saying, this is not a place you want to be. Please stay on the right path. Don't come here. They would be at home because they had been rehabilitated, and they are able then to really touch others.
Yeah.
So the entire prison system, I don't see how any of it is working.
It isn't, not in America.
For us.
No, it's not working for anybody.
No.
It's only working for parties who earn money from it. And there is a lot of naive, is that the right word, naive? a lot of people who are naive, and what I said, they want these people out of the way because they want to reach that American dream. That's naive. That's a fairy tale. That's nonsense. That's also, I think that maintains mass incarceration. People want to look the other way. They are like little children, you know. Sometimes a little child, you know, then he puts his hands for his eyes and he says, when I don't see it, then it doesn't exist. Well, that's what you see with mass incarcerations. All these prisons are built far away from society, so nobody can see it, and people forget about it. People forget about their own citizens. They should take care of them.
You know,
that's what I want to say. With locking up these people, they also lock away a part of themselves. That line of imprisoned people and free people, that line, that the wall, is not so dividing as that we think. We all carry the good and the evil side, both. And we try to reject. We try to reject the bad side, and we only want to emphasize the good side. But it's about finding the middle. If I make an example for my children that I say, you do bad things because you get in prison, that doesn't work, because my children also need their life experience, also the bad ones. They have to fall down, because those are the moments you learn from life. You know, it's very naive to think, I never preach to them, but I talk to them, you know, try to get them into self-insight, because that's true awareness, that's true learning, in my opinion. And locking, because one of the goals of incarceration in the United States is that they want to make an example. See what's happening if you go the wrong direction. Then you will end up the same way, but it doesn't work. Children have to make the mistakes. They have to fall down. They have to, and as a parent, sometimes it's difficult, but then sometimes protecting can be bring more harm, because if I overprotect my children, then they don't learn from life, and then they go into the wrong direction because they are curious. They want to know the bad side and the good side, both.
And unfortunately, that's the truth. You know, that's happened even with my own situation. I protected my son as my parents protected us. But the problem is he wasn't prepared for the city versus the country, you know, for the serious versus the party person. Sometimes we don't teach our children, or we don't allow them to learn about the other side. And they get sucked into situations that they have no control over sometimes. And when something happens, then they are the ones that are looked at. They don't look at the other side. They don't try to figure out where it went wrong. When you see somebody that has never been in trouble before, that has done good all their lives, that are not involved with drugs or gang membership or any of that, then try to look at the other side to figure out. Marian, you say this all the time. It's not the person, it's not the crime, it's the cause. And unless they look at both sides, they're not going to understand the whole entire situation. And many people, they might commit a crime, and then they might be so afraid, they might end up leaving the country, which that goes against them as well. Not taking into consideration what's going on in their mind prior to or during. Sometimes they're thinking it's so irrational that they just are doing all these crazy things just to try to find themselves, to try to get out of situations where they feel they don't fit in. These things also happen.
Yeah, and I think a lot has to do with the denial of the dark side and the shadow in yourself. We all carry both sides, and what you see in this you can apply to the human psyche, and what you see, but when you look bigger, you see that mass incarceration also works on the same way. Mass incarceration is on a big scale trying to lock up the quote bad, because we don't want to see the bad. Well, if we think about what is bad or what is good, we can write a million books are written about what is bad and what is good, because it's very relative. it depends on the perspective one looks from. So that's also a relative. But what you see in society is that people, that's also a kind of being naive, is looking up the bad, and the bad has to be punished. So
yeah.
So we are the good in society. But that's an illusion, because we all, you know, if somebody murders a man or a woman, and he's not a murderer, he is a human being who committed a murder. Crime will always remain a part of his or her psyche, but that's not the whole person. That's not the whole person. I don't know what's going to happen in my life. Maybe in 5 years I will commit a crime. I don't know. I cannot see in the future.
Exactly.
Nobody. You know, if somebody says, I would never do that, well, that's naive. That's a little child that says, I put my hands before my eyes, and when I don't see it, then it doesn't exist. That's also childish. It's so naive. We have
it
to
is.
Work. We have to work through our own shadow parts, our own dark parts, and they are part of. You know, you cannot know the light if you don't know what the dark is. You cannot enjoy the summer if you don't know what the winter is. It's the same mechanism. Both parts, it's a yin yang. It's four thousands of years old. It really works that way. And what you see in the United States, they don't want to look at that part that's locked up, because that's the dark part, that's the shadow part. But we are the good ones. Oh, we are so great because we did not commit a murder. We did not commit a crime. Nonsense. Naive. Childish.
No. It can strike. It can be like lightning. It can strike anywhere, anyone, anywhere, at any time. And I'll tell you, it can be on both ways. I would have been one of those people that said the same thing. Oh, I would never have, or he would never have. We never know what the situation is going to be at the time that's going to set something off. And a lot of, even addiction, even people that are addicted to drugs, there a lot of them, most of them, addicted because they have pain inside they're trying to cover up. So they revert to alcohol or drugs. They don't look at that. They look at it, they want to be doing drugs for fun. No one does anything for fun unless it's healthy for fun.
Yes, mm-hmm. people who are addicted that way, and people who struggle are struggling with finding their own spot in the world. I always say to my children, one moment you get physically born, and somewhere in your life you have to find to become born in a psychological way or in a spiritual way. And a lot of people, especially in this time, have lost their own spot in the world. So if you are not connected to your spot in the world, if you are not able to live from your authentic being, then you are, in a way, you are not born, or in a way you are incarcerated. Sometimes I tell prisoners here in the Netherlands, there are more incarcerated people in the streets than in prison.
That's the truth.
Absolutely.
And what you see with drug addiction, alcohol addiction, other addictions is it's fleeing from reality. It's fleeing from reality because the reality is too harsh. So what they need is somebody who takes the hand of that person and say, hey, I'm going to walk next to you on your life path for a while you are going to search for that spot in the world.
But that's beautiful.
And what incarceration does, it emphasizes the problem of not having being connected to that spot in the world, because they take the whole human being, even the body, away. So they make it worse. So why do we have a lot of recidivism? Yeah, well, it's not, the answer is not so difficult to think of. So, you know, I have clients in my own practice. They are not incarcerated people. And they all end up with the same problem. They have all kinds of personal issues from the youth, et cetera, but it always comes back to that one question: what is your spot in the world? Who are you as your authentic being? That has to be emphasized.
Yeah. I was just thinking about doing a blog earlier, and then the title of it is Live You.
Yeah.
Because so many people don't even know who they are to begin with. you know, we believe the way we were raised is the right way. We believe opinion from peers is that must be the right opinions. Our parents thought this, therefore I think this. It has to be right. So until we can realize we are not our thoughts.
No.
You know, we're not our thoughts. We are who we are because we can go, if we find we're not living our authentic selves, we can go in, look at our mindset, pick it apart, and restructure. We have that capability. These people that are incarcerated do not have that capability. They don't have time to even, their minds are so tangled. It's not possible for them without help, you know, to figure out who they really are and how they really want to live.
Exactly. And
so they're absolutely robbed.
Exactly. And the biggest pain is it's deliberately designed this way. You know, prisoners are not allowed, are not meant to think about themselves because then they become authentic and then they realize what they are in and then they get riots and then they get problems, the system gets into a problem. So the whole, what you see, like how the days are structured, how the prison is structured in that way that they don't have the opportunity to think about themselves. That's a goal of the discipline. That's a goal of the system itself. It's meant to be that way, and that's a painful
yes.
thing. That's the inhumane thing, and that's the shame, and that's what I think about when I think of the concentration camps in World War II. I don't care what people say, but I keep making that resemblance. I see the resemblance.
I do too, yes.
It's really so shameful. So shameful that this exists in a civilized world. You know, there are countries which also have these kinds of systems, but then the whole country is, well, it doesn't make it better, but it makes it more understandable that these systems are in certain other, like North Korea, you know. But in the United States, which is considered to be a Western country, come on. Come on. What are we doing here? And we all looking at it, and we all keep silent.
And they talk about the inhumanity of North Korea and Iran and places like that. They're just as bad with their own people in this country. It's just
exactly.
They're so busy talking other countries that are being inhumane and abusive that they're not even thinking about this country in itself. The United States is a very vengeful, hateful, racist, ignorant, proud, greedy,
dividing.
Corrupt, deceptive, lying country. And they're talking
dividing.
About other countries abroad.
Dividing. It's very dividing.
That's it.
It's dividing, excluding. It's an excluding country. When Trump talked about building the wall to keep the immigrants out, I thought, well, Trump, if you make it a little bit bigger, then the whole of the United States is incarcerated. That's what I thought.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Maybe we need to just put a dome over the United States.
Yeah, and it's such a beautiful country. That's so stupid, you know. When I was driving from Miami to Charlotte, I was driving for 4 hours. It's such a beautiful country. Such a beautiful
yes.
nature. It's so, yeah, really, really. And then I think, why? But it's built on that whole history, and it can be changed, but people have to make a real existential choice. And it's an existential choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very deep choice of are we going to maintain this excluding or are we going, what Martin Luther King said, or are we going to be brothers and sisters? That's the choice that we have to make, and that mass incarceration is part of that. Mass incarceration is a huge form of excluding people.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you know, I know there's some deaths that some people that have been murdered in a terrible, terrible, terrible way. there was a 10-year-old child that was, you know, that was kidnapped, and the person, one of the people that knew of this child was friends with the family of the child. 10-year-old, it was a little Curly, his last name was Curly from Boston, and this happened years and years ago. But because that was so terrible, that prisoners are now stereotyped, I think, and it shouldn't be, because every situation is different. So when they spoke of abolishing life and life without parole sentences, the father naturally spoke out about his own situation with his little boy. But there's a difference between prisoners, the situations, the type of crimes. There are serial killers, there are terrorists, you know, there are people that are deranged that will do something like that to a child or an adult or an adolescent. But they don't look at the fact that that's in certain situations. Not every prisoner, not everyone incarcerated is incarcerated for something that terrible. And not all of them are incarcerated because they did something like that purposely or because they did it out of hatred. A lot of times there's so many different reasons. And this is where people in society, they cannot take sides. They have to remain neutral so that they can figure out how to resolve some of these issues. But it seems like when something happens, when crime happens, they all go to one side of that fence. And the ones that are left in the background are the ones that either weren't thinking rationally, they had some kind of mental problem, some kind of addiction, something that happened in their own lives. So we shouldn't feel like we have to take sides. The media has a habit of taking sides as well, which I remember as a kid growing up and as a teenager and an adult, the media back then, they did not take sides. They reported the news and that was it. We have a society today with young news reporters, young media people that are taking sides, and that should not be, because that has a lot to do with mass incarcerations as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, taking sides is already a judgment. I think the judge in court, he decides what the punishment will be. That's the only person who judges. After the sentence is known, then there shouldn't be any judgment anymore. If I talk with prisoners here in the system, I always say I talk with you. I'm not here to judge you. If you want a judgment, you go to court. I'm not a lawyer or something. So I'm talking to you, and I'm going with you behind the judgment. And I think it's much more important when you think about crimes that are committed. It's much more important to get clear about what was the intention of doing the crime. And the intention goes before the crime is committed. The crime itself is important, but the most important thing is the intention. Did you do it because out of evil? Did you do it because of a disorder, what you said, Leona? Or what is the reason why you do it? And it's not about, for me, if I try to talk about that, the intentions from prisoners, then I still don't judge. But I think it's very important in my work that the prisoner gets aware of his attention, because it gives him self-insight. And everything is always about self inside, because then you grow into your authentic being to become yourself. The only
Absolutely.
One.
And I'm sorry, Miriam, go ahead.
No, I was only saying that you know, after the judges have spoken, then judgment is done, and then we have to rehabilitate. Because if you take sides, if you keep taking sides, or what society does, society wants to label everything. You know, it's putting a label on the prisoner, the inmate, while that person does not exist.
And you know, I think people need to understand by not choosing to help make a difference, they're still making a choice, and that choice is not to help make a difference.
That's a very important one. That's a very, being silent is also speaking, yes.
Mm-hmm. And also, I want to mention, because there is a certain group of incarcerated individuals, you know, that we really haven't talked a whole lot about, and that is those are the people that are 13, 14 years old who are sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Isn't that sentencing these people to death, these children, these little children to death?
They're actually working on that, though, around the country. I noticed, I was doing some research myself, and there's a lot of them. You know, years ago when I was doing social work for the Cape and Department of Social Services, they had the Department of Youth Services where they would put anyone under 18 years of age that committed any crime, they would put them in a detention center, but it wasn't an adult detention center. I don't know where that came from. I think, like Marion said, I think it came from money, you know, making all this money. But there was a judge that was actually indicted for taking bribes and putting these adolescents, these youth, in prison. I mean, serving these inhumane sentencing. So that judge was sentenced. I don't know. I don't think that this. I think they're working on undoing all this damage that they've done with these adolescents, because that isn't right either.
No, and I know they have abolished the death sentence for that age group, but still, you know, I mean, they haven't gotten to where they've separated them, you know, from regular prison life.
Yeah.
Those regular, hardened people that have been in there for all these years, and there's a reason they're hardened. Mm-hmm. But regardless of that, these children don't need to be in that mainstream.
No. You know, when I first started advocating for the incarcerated,
I only can stay silent, because that's really way beyond my rational thinking. Locking up children life without parole, I mean, life without parole is insane anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Only in America.
But children, yeah. It's unbelievable. I even can, my mind cannot.
No, because they're not finished growing. Just because they make a mistake, they do something that, you know, is written as a criminal act. Okay, they do that, but they're not finished growing. They have so many different avenues that can help them to change their path. But how can they do that if they're in prison? You know, they can't.
What I learned from my when I did the education to become a teacher. The human brain develops until 25. It's like planning, like having an overview and all those things develop until 25, the age of 25.
Mm. Yeah. It makes sense, too, because when you graduate, you go on to college for 4 years. You know, it's you're still in school. You haven't. A lot of these kids, when they're getting ready to graduate, a lot of them don't know which way to go. They don't know what they're going to do with their lives. If they don't go to college, they're going out in the streets. They're going in a new life as an adult. And this is another thing. When these adolescents are ready to graduate, that's when they start becoming, because they don't know which way to turn. So. Those who stay in school, they're at least, they're still going to school. They're still in that mindset. But, you know, I just, one of the things that I can't fathom what's happening in this country. I can't, when I listen to everything you're saying and when I think about it. But when I first started advocating for the incarcerated, I would talk to them like a social worker. I wouldn't talk to them like somebody that thought they were better or judgmental or whatever. And it took a few years, but some of these people started pouring out their hearts like little kids when they finally felt they could trust someone to talk with. And this is, I told a guard one time, if they treated the prisoners, if they did some work with them like social workers, and the first thing he said to me is, we're not social workers. Now, Marion, you know this for a fact. In Norway and I'm sure in the Netherlands, they say a lot of the guards, a lot of the officials were saying that they talked to their incarcerated individuals as though they were talking to them like friends or social workers.
Mm-hmm.
And this makes a big difference. In this country, they say we're not social workers. In other words, they're like military with these prisoners. They're not going to open up to someone they can't trust. But to talk with them, to try to understand where they're coming from, and when they see that you're showing that kind of concern about them as an individual, they will start opening up. They will. It happened when I was overseas, when I was traveling all these countries. I was talking to these young people about situations, and they would be opening up like they just were waiting for someone to talk to. This is what we need to have in America.
But that's I think the problem. But what I said is the judge in court, somebody is judged, and after that judgment is over, that should be over. And what you see in the prison system is that they keep being judged.
Exactly.
But when you are judged, if you are condemned all the time, then you paralyze. You cannot grow. You cannot heal if you're staying in that circle of judgment over and over and over again. You know, if I talk with the prisoners I talk with, and I talk from judgment, then the other one cannot open up. The other one cannot think about himself, because he is already guilty, and he will hear it every day. You are guilty, you are guilty, you are guilty. So he paralyzes. He doesn't change. His life is lost. If somebody's telling that to me every day, then my life is over, because I have no chance, because I'm guilty. Guilty, guilty, guilty. So what you see then is he's not only guilty for his crime, but he's guilty as a person. His whole personality is condemned. And it should be. That's the same as when, yeah, but it's the same as when you raise children. You know, if my child does something wrong, then there is a difference. I can say, hey, what you do, I don't like what you do. Or I can say, you are a stupid child.
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's, what do we do? Are we going to judge the crime, or are we going to judge the whole person? That's the difference. And what you see in the system is the person is condemned. The whole person is judged. So what has he? He cannot do anything. He cannot go forward. He cannot go backward, because the whole person is guilty. But it's about a piece that's guilty. There's only one piece that committed the crime. It's not the whole human being. We exist for more psychological parts than only that particular part. I am a mother, I am a teacher, I am I am a philosopher, I am all kinds of parts. And we all are.
Yes.
So
yeah,
why not?
That's an excellent point, yeah.
Yeah, and why not in treatment, why not emphasize the qualities? We all, you know, are born with a package of qualities. I always say to my children, well, you're born with a whole package of all kinds of qualities. And you have your whole life to unpack it and discover what your qualities are, your talents and the good things. There is so much talent in incarcerated that could be of, yes, that could be of so much use for the society, but in the first place for themselves.
That's it.
Yeah, and they lose their value. They lose their own sense of value. And how could they not when they're provoked to lose it every day?
We would lose it. You would lose it. I would lose it in that situation.
Absolutely.
People
mm-hmm.
I admire the people who get out when they are released after 20, 30, 40 years, and they have kept their sanity. Wow. I admire them, because they have. Yeah. I don't know if I could do it.
Mm-mm. I know I couldn't. I couldn't do what these people are forced to do. You know, like you said, once they're incarcerated, let them serve their time. You know, offer them treatment, medical, psychological, spiritual, you know, whatever the case may be. Offer them treatment, but don't continue the punishment beyond punishment.
Exactly.
You have nothing to look forward to every morning but to know that they're going to be punished again, and it shouldn't be.
No. their qualities should be emphasized, their talents. Go to this journey of discovery. Hey, what are your talents? What are your light parts? That should be emphasized, you know? And then and then you get a balance between your dark sides, your shadow parts, and your light parts, because both we exist from both, and then that can be balanced. And now only the dark parts are emphasized, and society locks people up because they only want their own light parts emphasized. So we lock up all the dark parts, the bad guys, the bad women, we are living in a whole nice light society. Well, it's a big lie and a big dream and a big naive thought.
Yes, it is. And you know, the thing too is we lock these people away and we say, oh my gosh, I am never going to be as bad as that person.
Yes.
Okay. So, yes, I'm going to make mistakes, but I'm not that bad. So comparing ourselves, because we're not locked up, as if, yeah, we know we have a bad side, but not that bad.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I am glad I have also very bad parts, because it makes me human too. I don't want to be an angel. If I have to make excuses to all kinds of all the people that I have hurt or whatever, now then I have a whole job to do. Yes, I'm human. Yeah, let's be both an angel and a devil. You know, the God and the devil are two sides of the same coin. They are, and we need both.
Well, yes, we do. That's why we can be well-rounded people, well-rounded and advanced, because what's the difference? The difference to me is that if we can accept every aspect of ourselves, and we don't have to agree with other people, but we have to be respectful and at least accept their points of view. So
yeah.
We need to also accept these people who are incarcerated and be able to look past what they did, you know, that, and like we've been discussing and Miriam, you brought out, they're not the crime. They're not the action that put them behind bars. There is so much more to these people than that.
Yes, a baby saying you recognize it when you work with incarcerated people or people on parole. What I experienced when I talk with imprisoned people, I learned so much from them. It's really equal.
Yeah.
They learned from me, but I learned from them too.
Yeah.
So that
we
makes
do.
It equal. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to say one last thing, and I'm going to let you girls do the talking, because we have about six and a half minutes. But I had a friend one time. She was elderly. Her name was Ruth. And her husband, they were married for years, but her husband was a womanizer, and he got involved with a younger woman. And Ruth was hurt. I mean, she was really hurt badly, because her husband would come home. She would go to use the car, and she'd find bras under the seat, underwear. And it was like it was becoming open. He was seeing with the girl out in the open and everything. And Ruth told me one time that she was getting a divorce, but she was married so long, she loved him so much, she didn't want the divorce. And then she would go back and forth. And she told me one time she could understand in my situation with my loved one what happened, because she thought about getting a weapon, and she thought about shooting her husband. And I told her, I said, Ruth, I said, let God handle it. You know, don't do any of this that's you're going to regret later. But she was so hurt, and they had been married for years, and here she is in her 70s, and he's in his 70s, and she's looking at, he's going out with this young girl in her 40s or 50s. One day, I was on the phone at home, and my mother came running over the house, and she said, Leona, Ruth is trying to get a hold of you. And I was on the phone. She said her husband, Norman, just had a heart attack. So I jump in the car and I go to her house. The ambulance was there. The police were there. Everyone was there. And I could see them in the bedroom. He was on the floor. And I could see his legs, and they were trying to resuscitate him. and Ruth was in the kitchen crying, and I was trying to console her. Well, you know, that night he passed away. I stayed over the house with her to comfort her, to let her know that she wasn't alone. But the thing is, this is what happens. This is a woman who may have, had he not died, she may have ended up getting a gun and she may have ended up shooting him, or maybe have gone after the woman he was having the affair with. But it goes to show you how situations can occur. And in this situation, it was a woman who was very, very hurt, very so much pain, because someone that she had known since her teenage years, someone she had been married to for so many years, was ending up cheating on her with some younger girl. And this can be reversed. It can be the other way around. We never know.
And then you see that the word offender and the word victim is very relative too, because before her thoughts, if she would have committed that crime, but if you looked, would have looked before that crime, then she was the victim and he was the offender.
That's it.
And if she would have committed the crime, she would have been the offender and he would have been the victim. So it's very relative. It's not that divided, you know, that's what I also said about labels. And it's also with these words. Who is the victim and who is the offender? What happened before that crime? Somebody has been driven crazy by another person.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the victim of that other person, and then he commits a crime, and then there's a role reversal. But who is looking at the period before the crime took place?
That's a good point. That's like a lot of the drug dealers get started because they have been in an accident and were given pain medication, and the doctor at some point doesn't say, okay, we need to wean you off of this. He just keeps going ahead and prescribing him more and more.
Exactly.
So he would not have been a drug dealer without having the accident and without having the prescriptions. So
exactly.
Yes.
It's not so, we cannot say easily that one is good and that one is bad. These words are very relative. It depends on the perspective you look from. And I think it's good to be aware of that.
I agree.
We have 2.5 minutes left, and I'd like to let the audience know, next week when Marion and Sandy are on with us again, please do call in. If you have experiences, if you have gone through something, if you have a loved one incarcerated, or even if you are a correctional officer or someone that wants to share some of the knowledge or the experience or whatever with us, please call in next week. The phone number would be 657-383-1630. Marianne and Sandy are on with us next Wednesday, the 30th, from 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Eastern Central Time, Eastern Daylight Time. And Marianne and Sandy, if you'd like to give information, you can find them both on the internet by typing in their names, Marianne Jacobs and Sandy Freese, F-R-E-E-S-E. And if you girls want to give them any of your contact information or say any last-minute things, please do.
Well, I would like to say that I revamped my entire website for my life coaching. It's professional life coaching and cognitive behavioral therapy. One of my goals is to work with those coming out of prisons and through cognitive behavioral therapy, hopefully help them to get their minds organized so they can move forward. But I changed my website. It is victoryfromchaos.com.
Okay, and for my website, it's still the same. It's www.deeperjustice.com, and there you can read about what I'm doing and the work I do with incarcerated people, the book I'm writing, and the essays I've written. Thank you.
We've been blessed and honored to have both of these women on with us every week, and it's very educational, it's very interesting, it's very awakening. And these are some of the things that need to come out more often, because the media needs to change and needs to report both sides when situations happen. Politicians need to get a backbone, and don't be so afraid to challenge the system, because that's the only way change is going to be made. And we look to the politicians, the political leaders, to make changes in our criminal justice system. I also want to let everyone know that anytime you want to come on the show to discuss any of these things, feel free to contact me at 508-583-0051. We are now getting ready to shut down, and thank you so much, Mariam, for being on with us. Thank you so much, Sandy, and we look forward to next Wednesday, same time. And I thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you.